appendices to phlegm. Appendix 1, Phlegm and Me, a Primer. B. Ambler Wesley School Book Company, Chicago, 1897. The stuff of which the phlegm is made is very light and fine, and at first scarcely viscous at all, but as it is plied, folded, and fluted, its texture changes. Touch it. Can you feel the difference? It is stickier and more resilient. With Mr. Microscope to help us, we can see wondrous alterations on the molecular level. The round atomies are joining hands with other atomies and collecting into little strings. Soon other changes begin to happen. Some of these strings connect to each other at an angle, and when there are three of them, it may happen that the third string connects to the beginning of the first string, making a triangle. Four strings make a square, a diamond, or a trapezoid. How many shapes can you name? Tiny cubes and pyramids are rapidly built and demolished. Then more complicated forms, so many that we don't even have names for them all. When you hear the phlegm is castling, this is what is meant. Here's where you can help. By itself, the phlegm will become a shapeless mound, bristling with little points. But by touching and folding the phlegm, you can give it a beautiful form and even texture. It may seem bossy and mean to restrict the exuberance of the phlegm, but we have seen how this exuberance ends up messy. The disciplined phlegm is harmonious and radiates well-being. It does not shout, "Look at me." It is simple and modest, like good boys and girls. This work can be done alone, but when two people love each other very much, shaping the phlegm together becomes a wonderful way of expressing their cordial feelings. We do not go to these lengths for a simple greeting, of course. A standardized series of kneading gestures in a 1-2-3 count will suffice. The, "We'd better lance that," the, "From where I was sitting, you looked out to me," and the, "I'm trying to find my way in dense fog" series are the most widely accepted today, but others will come into vogue and these will come to look a little quaint, just as the most common gestures of yesteryear, the "Goosey, goosey gander" and "What's this in my pocket," seem to us today. Appendix 2. Commercial phlegm, bane or boon? By Llewellyn Turk, American Pastimes, number 133, May 1961. Don't be deceived by the packaging. Commercial brands of phlegm differ only in the dyes and fragrances they add. There is really only one way to make phlegm. I exclude, of course, that cheap novelty, also sometimes called phlegm, though it is hardly worthy of the name, made of cornstarch, food coloring, and water, and often adulterated with sequins and canned sentiments on strips of colored paper. You've seen it at checkout stands in supermarkets and gas stations. It reaches its nadir in those garishly colored, or worse, glow-in-the-dark souvenirs peddled at holiday resorts, ball games, beaches, and amusement parks with their thematic enclosures, mini soccer balls, international flags, and the like. Phlegm is milked from naturally high-yield individuals, often illegally, in huge third world spit shops, much like factories, where an unnatural and unhealthy level of production is induced by the all-dairy diet, fondling, performed by crack teams of fondlers, often underage, short films, etc. This phlegm is whisked out of the area to ensure that as little imprinting as possible takes place between the parent and the phlegm. In a holding shed, it is spread out in huge shallow tanks and slowly decocted under moonlight. A process that takes some weeks. Daytimes, it is covered with heavy black tarpaulins to retard evaporation, since the decoction must be slow to allow the phlegm to become completely alienated from the parent psyche. This is a solemn period of separation, introversion, the putting aside of the easy attractions of a world of 1,001 desires. Next, the phlegm, thickened but not yet quickened, is rolled up in big soft pancakes and shunted down the belt to a forcing chamber, where it is sieved through a series of ever finer screens, the last one of pure silk, after which it has lost whatever accidental form the decoction tanks bestowed on it. Now it is a pure inchoate jelly. Next comes the rapport, the phase for which skeptics reserve their strongest criticisms. How can the phlegm come to maturity through the offices of a machine? Be that as it may, the fact remains that after yielding to a vigorous kneading under the paddles, then a delicate spindling and fluting around the finger-like spools in the agitator, the phlegm is almost indistinguishable from natural phlegm, with the following differences, good or bad, depending on your viewpoint: that it is sanitary, and that it is free of those neurotic formations that often castle spontaneously in the phlegm of even quite normal individuals. This concludes my summary of the industry. That working conditions must be stringently reviewed and, where necessary, regulated is obvious. May concerned parties take note. These issues aside, I confidently recommend the use of machine phlegm in all situations where hygiene is of concern, as well as those numerous social situations where the individual is concerned to make a good impression and his or her own phlegm is not up to snuff.